All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our case study call for November 2018. And we have three cases. We're hoping we can get through all three of them without staying up till midnight. And the first one is Shonda. It's not so bad for you because you're on the West Coast, but we're all on the East and the Central time. Many of you are on the West Coast. So you have a case, and I'm going to share my screen to show the case. And what I'd like you to do is just tell us a little bit about the person that you submitted for. Yeah.
So this is my beautiful niece.
Oh, nice.
Who is having some really strange, bizarre symptoms. So background is her mom has Lyme disease, and they've tested her, and she tested positive as well. She has been going to a naturopath. Her sort of her main concerns are, like, she is, how old is she? Is it on there? 18? 18 or 19?
Didn't say here. Age 18. Yep, 18. You said 18.
Okay. And she's been having episodes of vomiting randomly after eating. Was hardly able to eat. Things have cleared up a little bit. Couldn't relate it to any particular food. A lot of nausea, a lot of low energy. Then she was having numbness and tingling in her legs and her arms, and then the next day her legs would ache really bad.
Mm.
She's been, I think, her mom's a nurse. You know how some nurses are, they never take their kids to the doctor, and then some nurses take their
take
kids
them for every sniffle, every, yeah.
I think that's my sister.
That's your sister. Every sniffle she goes to the doctor.
So she's taken her to the ER. They are disturbing symptoms, but
I wouldn't take people to the ER, right? My kids have never been to the ER.
Yeah. So she has been going to a naturopath who did put her on a regimen for parasites. And I just spoke to her this afternoon to get an update because my sister said that she was feeling better. Okay. So she is not throwing up after she eats, but, like, this was going on for months that she would just eat a little bit and she would just throw up. Couldn't keep anything down. She still is having some aching in her legs. Her energy is still very low, but when I look at her labs, her TSH is quite low. Hmm. And they won't do full thyroid testing. Welcome to Canada.
Welcome to Canada.
Welcome to Canada.
Oh, boy.
Did she
start this parasite protocol after having tested her, or just like, oh, it sounds like parasites, let's do it?
Yeah, well, I think he does muscle testing.
Okay.
And they lived in Costa Rica for a year.
Okay.
So they all should have done parasite testing. They're all now doing parasite testing. Okay. Or protocols, sorry.
Her protocols. And she feels better. And do you know what the protocol was?
She's still having some aching in her legs. Her energy is still way too low for an 18-year-old. Like, my gosh, at her age.
Yeah, she should be bouncing.
She should be bouncing off the walls, right? Diet isn't great. She says to me, you know, when I eat things that probably aren't that healthy, you know, I get a little nauseous. I'm like, well, what does not that healthy mean to you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I eat out, she figures if she eats at home, it's healthy.
Is it?
Tell me what you ate. So it's more if she eats anything that's processed or in a restaurant. So she had burger and fries. And I said, well, that doesn't really count as healthy. Sorry, honey.
No.
You're right. But if she has a burger that her dad makes, doesn't have any problems with it.
Okay. Did they eat organic stuff?
It's not a family that eats out.
Okay.
They eat at home. They do most of their own cooking. They may not make all the best choices, but Leanne has really, her mom has really changed their diet a lot, her diet a lot, because she went to Hippocrates Institute.
Oh, cool.
When she got diagnosed with Lyme disease, and has been eating up until probably the last few months, mostly not raw, but vegan, 100% vegan juicing.
That's a lot of the good stuff she learned at Hippocrates, yeah. And the kids were doing it too?
No, gosh, no, okay. These are teenagers. But I think Leanne said to me the other day that her kids have finally realized, which I think is amazing because they're young. Joel, her son, is 21 and Isabel is 18, that they can't eat like everybody else. they have health issues and they just can't. So,
well, that's good.
I'm excited because I'm moving there in 2 weeks.
You're going to be there in 2 weeks?
I'm going to be living in the same house as them for a while.
Oh, okay. Maybe you can have some good influence here. Because here's the thing, right? The mom has Lyme disease and the daughter has it, right?
Yeah.
So how long ago were they diagnosed with Lyme?
Leon was just diagnosed probably 2 years ago, but she had the typical tick bite as a teenager with the rash and the swollen joints and all of that. But testing, they did test her, came back negative.
Yeah. But at that point, that's where I'm a fan of antibiotic intervention, right there when they get it, because you prevent the long-term effects. You know it's a tick bite. You know it's there. Just do a round of antibiotics, fix the gut after that.
Yeah.
Because when they wait and it becomes chronic, it's so much harder to deal with.
She's my sister has really struggled her whole life with just feeling like garbage, but she's a type A personality, so she pushes herself to do everything to the nines. Like, you go into her house, it looks like a magazine, and she puts on parties like a magazine. Oh, drives me nuts. I'm like, you can't do that.
Oh, yeah, her adrenals are kind of burned.
No, her adrenals. She's had kidney cancer and had her kidney out.
Oh, no. How old is she?
My sister is a year older than me.
Oh, Lord.
So 49.
Oh, my. So your sister's had a long history of imbalance in her body.
Yep.
And then the Lyme just puts her over the edge. Now, the daughter, she was diagnosed recently,
just this year.
And that was, did they do the testing after she started present with these weird symptoms, or was it before?
Well, I think when Leanne started looking more into Lyme and heard that it could cross the placenta, and then Isabella's got far lower energy than she should have, that she went and had her go back to this naturopath that Leanne goes to that deals with
Lyme. They both have chronic Lyme. So really differentiating between chronic and acute Lyme. And the daughter's been kind of low energy her whole life and just has gotten worse recently, right?
She's been plagued with headaches. That's what really stood out for me. And I've not lived around them for a long time, but I remember hearing that a lot. Like, she has a lot of headaches. She's very tiny. She's beautiful. She's physically fit. She's a dancer. Just not fitting. And then when all these other bizarre symptoms started coming up, Leanne started looking at it closer. So.
Okay. So it's, you know, those are common symptoms of Lyme, right? So, neuropathies, neurologies, the myopathies, everything, you know, arthritic symptoms, brain fog, fatigue, all of those are symptoms of a chronic Lyme. And if they're addressing it by just going and doing parasite, yeah, that's a good thing if she has parasites. And it's possible that some of those herbs in the parasite cleanse, I don't know what herbs he's got her on, but they can help decrease the overall load. So if she has parasites on top of Lyme, that's going to just decrease some of the load so the symptoms will go down. But they need to address the Lyme, right? They need to... And the only way to address Lyme is to clean up the body, clean up the system, just take all the extra stress off so the body can deal with it. And then they can do herbs and you can, let me remember his name. Well, Horowitz wrote the book, Why Am I Not Healthy? Mm-hmm. And I don't really agree with a lot of his approaches because he learned some of the alternative stuff, but he does heavy duty antibiotic stuff. But then he'll go, oh, well, we can also add this herb. Whereas the other guy that he actually mentions in the book, not Bredesen, that's the Alzheimer's, the guy, I'm having such a hard time with names this week. But he talked in the Lyme Summit a couple of years ago, and he does a whole herbal, very intense herbal and homeopathic protocol for Lyme. And a lot of people get good results with that. It is intensive, but you have to do the diet stuff in addition to it. And that's stuff that Horowitz doesn't mention in there. It's like, oh, well, this worked. What if you actually added getting these people off crap? He went through the whole process and, oh, a lot of them have heavy metal issues. Oh, a lot of them have adrenal issues, and we have to fix all that underlying stuff. And then he does it with heavy duty rounds of antibiotics. So, you know, it's not just Lyme. I don't know if they were tested for co-infections, because that's a biggie too.
Well, I don't think either of them have been. And it's interesting. This naturopath that she's going to uses a light therapy machine, and he's been treating Lyme for years. And he said this is what has got, is getting the best results. And so every few months, my sister orders it. He ships it to her. She does so many sessions with it, and her symptoms get better. I don't know anything about it. The guy that developed it in Canada is on to bigger and better things and isn't supporting it anymore. So I don't even think it's going to be around for long. Wish I could get my hands on it.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good thing to look at. But again, I think, you know, so yeah, you have a tick bite, you get Lyme, but you're going into the tick bite perfectly healthy on a really clean diet, really fit, et cetera, then hey, you know, it's not going to affect you the same way as it will if you're coming in depleted with bad diet and a lot of dietary stress. So I think these are some of the things that you need to emphasize with both of them, that we're, yes, treat the Lyme, but it's not treating the underlying susceptibility to infections of any kind, right? Because their immune systems are shot.
Yeah. Is there any hope, like, from what I can tell, and I've not done a lot of research on this, but it seems to be all about managing it, that you can't really get rid of it, or it's very difficult?
You know, I think it's very difficult to get rid of. I think it's a lot of it is managing it, but the managing is creating this healthy system that can support it and having the right herbs and stuff. I think when you get into heavy duty over and over antibiotics for it, like Horowitz recommends, holy cow. I mean, what are you doing to your gut flora? Yeah. So now you've got this messed up gut flora, which is a whole part of the immune system, and it's, you don't have the support there. So I think there's ways, and Laura's on the call if Laura wants to go on, because she's been through a lot with this and has studied it probably more than I have. I know that, I think Booner has a book on, you know, Lyme. I don't see it here. I might have it on a different bookshelf. But Stephen Booner, who wrote the herbal antibiotics, he has a book on Lyme. And he's very into looking at it from, you know, a more holistic way, but at least an herbal type of way. Yeah. And I cannot remember the guy. Let me just see if I can. Where's my Horowitz? Oh, no.
I can speak on this a little bit. I tried to open my video camera and it won't let me. But I think so many people come to this from a place of let's kill all the bugs and let's kill all the Lyme. And you guys are welcome to turn my video on if you know how to do that. But because it feels weird that I can see you, but you guys can't.
Yeah, I know. We keep talking.
I can't turn it on. It won't.
That happened earlier today with people. Yeah.
Stuff tonight. Okay, we'll just imagine.
Imagine your pretty face talking to us.
I don't think that should be the end goal, because to be completely honest, I think if you test a lot of people off the street, they're going to have some positive things going on or co-infections. And I really feel, my personal opinion is that Lyme disease is going to become like the new hot topic of like HIV. Like, we're going to be hearing about Lyme disease a lot in the future. And so that's not my end goal, even for my own healing or when I work with people. It's how can we work synergistically with this? Because to get to a point where you're not having symptoms, and interestingly enough, just a different perspective, I really like Dr. Klinghart. He has kind of more of a holistic approach to Lyme disease. And he was saying how a lot of people throughout history, like the really, you know, it's interesting, the people that get Lyme, they're usually the empaths, they're usually the black sheeps of the family, they're usually the people that are kind of doing their own thing. And
well, then it would be me that had it, not my sister.
But he was kind of saying how like Beethoven had syphilis, and syphilis is kind of similar, like the spirochetes are similar to Lyme disease, and how it's one of these interesting things of, you go through this journey and you come out a different person and you're marching against Monsanto and, you know, you clean up your diet and you're doing all this stuff. So I think if you can look at it as a perspective, that's what I have kind of done, is there's a lot of blessings in it. And one of those is that I think Lyme disease kind of forces you to take care of yourself. Like, we all know we're supposed to be drinking more water. We all know we're supposed to be going to bed. We all know that we're supposed to be eating a clean diet and detoxing and doing all of these things. And for me, it's if I don't do those things, then I really feel it. Then my symptoms flare. Like I have to be really gentle on myself with traveling, with different things, but I never did high dose antibiotics. I did not have peace about that. That just did not make sense to me. I went on the ILADS website and found there were three doctors basically within a 5-hour driving distance and one only treated with antibiotics. And I was like, oh no. And I got with one that just really treated me holistically. And so much of my healing has been the meditation and the self-care and the sleep. Oh my gosh, sleep. And a lot of Lyme doctors, my Lyme doctor was like, that's the first place that she started because she was like, we cannot reduce inflammation in the brain without you sleeping really, really well and really getting your body healing and working on that piece. And, it's really about coming back to basics in a lot of ways. And those are the things that were like the biggest tipping point. Coffee enemas, I will sing their praises. I do that at least twice a week, sometimes three times a week. And that I think just to help with the glutathione. And, I noticed a big difference with that, a big difference with infrared saunas, a big difference with, I think some of you guys heard my story about the aroma touch technique, like the essential oils on the back. And then I had worms coming out of me after that. Like that was crazy. But a lot of detox things and I could do an aroma touch technique and feel sick. I actually felt like I had the flu for several days after that, just applying essential oils on the back. And that was one of my Lyme doc's goals was do that once a week until you don't have that reaction to it. And I got to the point where I was like, oh wow, this actually feels awesome and relaxed me and I can go to sleep. But those were the things that I feel like helped me heal. Tai Chi, acupuncture, the diet. And then this kind of side note, but I really found this helpful. The Healing Questions Guide by Wendy Jensen is really good book. It's basically like if you guys have seen Louise Hay's book about Heal Your Body, and this is like, I feel like that's like a nice little cliff note version. And this is like the Big Mama book because she asks you questions. And I do this for like any of my, it's called The Healing Questions Guide and it's by Wendy Jensen. Maybe I can put it up there. And what I really like is it pulls in the, it asks you big questions. And I read them around Lyme disease and Epstein-Barr virus and these things and started like journaling out and like going through the emotional healing piece of all of this. And, I don't know. I feel like that's what a lot of it has been. But yeah, the raindrop technique, it's like very similar to aroma touch. They're like the same. And, there's, I don't know. So I don't think that it's, is it possible to completely eradicate all the Lyme from your body? Probably not, but that's not the end goal. Like the end goal is just to kind of get you feeling better and you're functioning. Like now I can work. I can do like a lot of stuff that I couldn't do before. And it's kind of interesting. My case study, I don't want to take up too much time, but cause I want to finish yours, but, mine's a new thing that's kind of popped up is the blood sugar stuff. And Dr. Rita Marie talks about that all the time. And it's like, yes, like I feel like I'm peeling back these new layers, but with each step, like I'm healing, like, with that, like there's kind of a correlation between Lyme and pelvic pain. And I was able for the first time ever in my life to have pain-free intercourse, like this month, which is huge. Like it's the whole reason why I went into pelvic floor PT. I have been working on this for years and I swear, like it's all of it. And I don't think you could like fast forward and get to that, but I've been married to my husband for 10 years and we've not been able to have like intercourse. And that was like brings me to tears to think about it. But I think it was everything that I'm doing. And I swear I'm really working on balancing blood sugar. And I feel like that with the pelvic floor PT, with the diet, with like all the things. So it's, when someone gets like diagnosed with that, I almost feel like, okay, welcome to this journey because you're going to completely transform your life and you're going to change everything, but you're going to come out a different person and I wouldn't change it. Like, cause I was like, I've been on this journey for for a reason. So that was a really long explanation.
No, it was great.
You know, that's okay. Cause that brought up a lot. It's just fascinating because my sister has just started seeing a pelvic floor specialist PT. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And talking about curing is about me, not her.
Yeah.
Cause she's actually said she's come to terms that this is now her new norm, that she will have Lyme disease and she has to figure out how to manage it and manage it better.
Yes. And, you know, I just wanted to step in with when you say the new norm, a lot of people will just accept that and this is how I will feel. But the new norm is that the bug will be there. It's not going to get gone away, but that she can feel a whole lot better. Like Laura is just so different than she was.
Yeah, and that's not what I mean. That's not, I think what it means to her is that she can't do what she wants to, like, to the level at least at this point in her life. She has to tone back her life and focus on her health.
Yeah,
that is now her new norm.
That's good. That's good that she is focused on, rather than I'm going to tone back and just keep doing what I've been doing. And it sounds like because she went to Hippocrates and, you know, did that. So from the perspective of your niece, I think it's super important. She's 18. So she's, you know, it's a lot harder for an 18-year-old to take on all these things, but really painting the picture of what her future will be if she doesn't do it now and painting her picture like at 18. Oh my God, her future can be so amazing because she doesn't have the 40 years behind her of body abuse, you know,
right.
And really letting her and reinforcing with her. Look, your mom went this way. She got kidney cancer. She lost one of her kidneys, right? You have her genes. You've got this thing from her and we want to prevent that for you. And not only prevent that for you, but instead of being like your mom is now at 40, whatever it is, 48, we want you to be like vibrant and, you know, and you're right in the prime of your life right now. And this feels sucky to feel this way at 18. And like, it's going to take a little doing for you to just sit with her gently but firmly to say, there's no herb to get rid of this. There's no drug to get rid of this. There's no easy protocol to get rid of it. It's a comprehensive thing that encompasses your whole life and that you don't have to live this way. And awesome. You will be better.
I'm probably not as gentle as I could be. I was visiting her.
Members.
She was doing her parasite protocol, and she's eating a popsicle. I said, "What do you think you're doing?"
And you're this actually it. Didn't give her
get rid of the sugar.
He didn't give her dietary things. He just gave her. This is where I
know, right?
Which makes me cringe. These are naturopaths. What does
right?
that mean?
But they don't do diet,
and they don't talk diet. They just talk herbs and therapies, and
She's very good because she's very motivated to feeling better. So she immediately threw it out.
Oh, good.
She just didn't know.
She just didn't know, right? Didn't know. And that's where you can be. You can be Anthony who comes in and educates her on what to do.
Our house is going to turn into a law, like a 24-hour healing spa.
That's right.
For a few months. I'll be working on everybody.
Yeah, it sounds like your sister's totally open. She went to Hippocrates. Getting her back on track if she's gone off and reminding her that you can't, like Laura said, right? I can't get away with the stuff other people can get away with, right? I've got to really stick with this healthy regime. I have to sleep. I have to take care of myself. I have to eat right. Now I'm getting my blood sugar balanced, right?
Yeah.
So all of these things, introduce them to a blood sugar meter. It's where your expertise lies,
well,
right?
But my sister's blood sugars are actually pristine.
Okay. Well, that's good then.
Yeah. Hers are really good. Now I'm concerned about her kids because teenage diet. So we'll definitely be working on that.
Yeah.
Is there a connection? Because I'm not overly familiar with all the co-infections with Lyme disease, but I'll delve into that and I can do some research on that. But is there a connection between the Lyme and her thyroid being overactive? Because her TSH is
low.
And that's all I have is a TSH.
Oh, that's all you have. You don't have
TSH. That's all they will do. They will absolutely not do anything else.
So we want to look, is it TSH low? Is it exceptionally low? Or is
it falls within normal in Canada. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was low. I think their parameters are so ridiculously wide. You just passed it.
I just passed it. There we go. For not being on medication, that's pretty low, yeah. Right? I'd rather see it 1.5 to 2.5, ideally somewhere in that range. So definitely low. Now, we don't know enough to know if she's low and the thyroid hormones are high or normal, because they may not have gone high yet, then we're thinking hypothyroidism. If it's low and her thyroid numbers are low, then we have to look at pituitary.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't have enough information here to know that. Is there a connection? I'm sure there's probably a connection because her body's so stressed out. Now, her body's real stressed out. Let's look at a couple of adrenal markers.
They don't do much lab testing.
No, but do they at least do the, like, sodium and potassium? They do really bad labs in Canada. Mm-hmm. I hate when I have to look at a Canadian lab. It's like, where's the electrolytes?
What is the point of doing this?
Oh, sodium, potassium, and those are within range. But I would, it's all within range. I would be, thinking that maybe the thyroid is suppressed, the thyroid might be overactive and then the pituitary is suppressing. But it could be adrenal stress, right? Because high or low, and it creates that problem. It could be a receptor thing, but I want to see the T3 and T4. Yeah. I don't like playing in a vacuum and guessing.
It's tough, right? When they don't do good labs. So we actually, where we're living, will be just be a few hours from Washington State. I've already emailed my sister. Here's all the labs for direct labs. Here's the closest one. We're all going down as a family.
Good.
We're all going to get proper labs done.
Because we don't know. And I'm sure that there, there's all kinds of Babesia and there's a lot. Babesia is one of the most common ones. And there's all kinds of co-infections. And if they don't have a specific, some of them have a specific predilection for specific areas in the body, let's just say. And I don't have that memorized. I think Horowitz's book is a good one to get, although he talks so much about the antibiotics. He has charts in there. And I don't have the physical book. I have the Kindle book, and it's a little harder to find the charts and all. And he has a good questionnaire there, and he has a chart which lists all the different co-infections and stuff. So it's just worth that book. Okay. Why can't I get better, Horowitz? And you can look some of that stuff up, and you can do web searches and Google searches and find out. But I haven't searched for a connection between, have you looked on, I would go to Google Scholar, even though I'm here on, it's Lyme. You never know who you're getting when you find somebody's blog that talks about stuff. Like, whose blog did they copy the work from? And
that's what I've noticed. I read a blog and I'm like, oh, that sounds good. And then you just sort of Google that topic and everybody's written the exact same.
Yeah, they just copy each other's stuff and you don't know what the source is. They don't put sources in. Who's this guy? Holtarf. Okay, they're pretty good. So if you're hypothyroid, I'm going to do a different search. Hyper. This guy's pretty good in Natural Endocrine Solutions.
Okay.
Before I discuss the possible connection, talk about Lyme disease. He tells about it. Testing, false negatives. We all know that. There's a lot of false negatives. Maybe research that confirms it. So same thing I said. I don't know if you need research, but it can affect the endocrine system and other parts of the body.
Is there, while you're going through that, is there a connection between autoimmune and Lyme? I would think
for sure.
It makes sense that there would
definitely
be.
Definitely. And I think Horowitz covers that. I was just looking at the table of contents, and he does, let's see, table of contents. So he has a Lyme disease and tick-borne Lyme disease co-infections, Lyme and immune dysfunction, Lyme and inflammation, Lyme and environmental toxins, mitochondrial dysfunction, hormones, the brain, sleep disorders, and he's found connections in all of these. Autonomic, allergies, gastrointestinal, liver dysfunction, pain, exercise, and he goes into chapter 20 talks about meditation, mind, and when I was listening to it, I listened to it on audio and I'm like, is he ever going to say anything about diet? Is he ever going to say anything about, you know, stress? Is he? And then he did at the end, like his afterthoughts, you know? Right.
Yeah.
But
I'm always amazed.
Yeah. It's crazy. So I think not knowing where it's coming from, the low, you know, I don't know that there's no direct connection that I've heard. This guy's a big researcher on it. So,
okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll certainly get more thyroid testing on her. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything really overt.
I'm just going to look through this real quick and see. Her labs look actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You can see. TSH is off. C-reactive protein is low. B12, I don't care about. Ferritin and iron are normal.
B12 runs low in their family.
Yeah, well,
and they're all on
it. I don't think that serum B12 means anything. So I want to look at MCV. A ferritin of 37. RBCs are fine. Hemoglobin's a little on the low side. When there's a normal iron, we don't have iron, so it's incomplete. But when there's a normal iron and a low hemoglobin, I always think about B6.
Okay.
Hemoglobin, okay, hematocrit's fine. MCH, never MCV. Did they not do MCV? Oh, there it is. Phew. No, MCV looks okay.
Yeah.
Okay. MCV looks fine. So I don't think B12 is an issue.
Okay.
I mean, her lab tests are very clean. Her basal pills. Yeah, everything looks really clean.
But she's only 18.
I know she should have it clean, but like I'm looking at her basophils or eosinophils to see if they're elevated because that would be a parasite thing.
And they're not.
And they're not. No.
And yet doing a parasite protocol got rid of a lot of
Yeah, because those parasite protocols are often kind of generic. So I want to know what herbs is he doing and what.
So he did, I'll tell you what he did. He did cloves. He did cloves and cilantro. He did a tincture that he made up. Can't read his handwriting. Have no idea what's in it. He made them take high stevia powder, like he says stevia will kill parasites, so they're him and her and her brother are both taking like a teaspoon of stevia a few times a day. I've never heard that before.
I hope they even tolerate that.
I don't know. I was just like, that's gross. I couldn't even do.
I mean, a little bit is super sweet. Like a pinch is what I use in anything. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but he says that high doses of stevia get rid of parasites. That's the first I've heard of that.
Especially a teaspoon. I'm surprised they're tolerant of taking it like that.
The kids, they love their sweet, hey?
Yeah, my man, that's so overly sweet. I would say, what kind of bitter can I put in there to calm it down? Like, put lemon juice in there, put some kale juice in there, something to tone it down. Oh my gosh.
I just take it.
Oh my. Okay. And what else was in there?
I think that's it. Because there was this tincture that I honestly was I have no idea what this says.
I don't even know. I'll just do a quick look. You guys can see my screen when I switch to the Google, right? Stevia.
Yeah.
And parasites. I'd look up, you know, to see if you see anything related to Lyme and any of the things in there. But I overall think it's reducing the toxic load in the body, right? So if they do have something growing, is stevia cancerous? Is it safe? Can it cause bloating? Can you gain weight? Not a carbohydrate. It doesn't say anything about parasites.
No.
I don't see, you know, usually it's show up right at the top. This is just, my parasites cleanse. She's just making something up. Stevia safe. Stevia kills Lyme disease better than antioxidants. Oh, Dr. X. Where did he steal this from? Borrelia. Lyme. study says. Let's see what the study says. We know relationships in more dormant state. Huh. Save this. I'll save it in my...
That's a common protocol from Dr. Klinghardt. Dietrich Klinghardt uses a lot of the binders and different things to detox the body, but stevia, high doses of stevia is one of his protocols.
Okay. Where's the, he says studies say, but he doesn't, I don't think I saw a link to it. Okay. I wonder who, he doesn't write any of his blogs, by the way, just so you know. Okay.
The I'm pretty sure that she told me it was for the parasite, but she may have gotten that wrong, hey?
Yeah. I laugh.
Shonda, it is what they use for parasite, and it's definitely for any kind of a Lyme or Borrelia or any of those things. That's their common approach. And when you have the tea, I think it's pronounced Cistus Santis. It's the tea that suppresses the activity of the viral and bacterial. They do a ton of stevia with it for that reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about it. I just know that I have heard in one of the lectures somewhere.
Okay. So have you ever heard of that before, Laura? Stevia and Lyme? No.
I know. Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't done it per se, but I use stevia drops in my cooking. I don't know if that's the same thing, but
no, it's really high powder, dose,
like, I'm with you guys.
Ooh. It sounds like make a bitter, bitter tea. What's the most bitter herbal tea you know? And then put the stevia in there and hold your nose and drink it down. I mean, that would be like that. It's obnoxious. If I ever put too much stevia in something,
Oh, it's nasty.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it. I mean, she has beautiful blood work, except for the TSH being low. Maybe just something for her. Look at the T3, T4, do the full thyroid panel. I wouldn't spend money on more testing other than that. And, yeah, get her cleaning up everything. And
do the diet stuff, which I'm going to work on. And it's – so what I heard was that – her sort of the symptoms that I described were typical Lyme, which is
neuropathies and polymyopathies. It can resemble MS. It's a great mimicker, right? And in different people, of course, depending on where their weakness lies, it's going to show. So yeah, it definitely, those symptoms are probably the Lyme.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. All right. So is Michelle on? Hmm. Do you see Michelle?
I don't. I was talking to her earlier, so I know she was planning to be here.
We'll go to Laura's case. And Laura was here. I'll just open your...
Do you want me to give you the Cliff Note version first?
Give me the Cliff Note version while I'm opening your files.
Okay. This is fascinating to me. It actually blows my mind. So I had a cancer scare last month where Christo is my Rolfer. I've worked with him for years. And right over where I had the desmoid tumor, he was like, Laura, something doesn't feel right here. And if you were any other client, I would say come back in a month and we'll check again. Because I get Rolfing about every 4 to 6 weeks. But he was like, something's not right. And with your history of, you know, the tumor and the hernias, go get it checked out. So I had scans done and there was no recurrence of desmoid tumor or hernia or anything like that, but they found PCOS. So that was kind of interesting. And a uterine fibroid. So that was the ultrasound. So they did a pelvic ultrasound showing, yes, that there was a little uterine fibroid and PCOS. And I was going, how could I have PCOS? I eat so clean. This doesn't make sense to me. I'm not eating sugar. I don't look like the typical PCOS patient. So I went and saw my functional medicine doctor, love him. And he was like, Laura, let's check your testosterone. Let's check your blood sugar levels. Let's check your thyroid. Let's check all the things. Right. So thyroid was fine. Testosterone was a little bit elevated and it's been elevated in the past, but it's coming down and it looks okay. and my fasting glucose was normal. My hemoglobin A1C is normal, but he ran a new test that I had not heard of before called a glycomark. And that was low, and it's an inverse relationship, and it's in one of the downloads, that test. So if it's low, that means it's actually spiking. It's kind of an average of what your blood sugar is doing over the past 2 weeks. And well, it was spiking.
Like fructosamine, maybe.
Or this is really weird. So he had me get, I actually have to show you guys because it's kind of cool. I still have my workout clothes on. This will be interesting.
But I have to Did you get a patch? Did you get?
So I got this. Have you guys seen this?
Freestyle Libre? Yeah. I wear one of those too. Yay.
So I love it. I love it. Nice. Yes. Yes. So he told me about it and he was like, Laura, you need to get this and start tracking your blood sugar levels all the time because there's something weird with this marker.
Yeah.
And you're spiking somewhere in there. So I have started tracking diligently and I posted like the upload in there. But he ran a test to check for autoimmune issues related to blood sugar and insulin. And one of mine came back positive. And it was an autoimmune marker for type 1 diabetes. I didn't know a whole lot about it. And it was just slightly high, but I did have antibodies for it, which is interesting because my grandfather is a type 1 diabetic. And so he was like, you know, you don't have type 1 diabetes, Laura, but you know, there's something going on.
Do you know what marker it was? Did you show it in here?
Yeah, it's in one of those downloads.
Okay, so this is the snapshot of your glucose, which actually.
It's not in that download. Go scroll through there. Okay, go the other one.
This one, the blue one?
Yeah. Okay. Is that it? It should be in one of those. Keep scrolling, keep scrolling. I can pull it. I have the actual ones, but
yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
This plan. Okay.
Let me look right here. And I'll see if I can find it in mine.
Maybe it's So this is from the Freestyle website.
Go down. So the one that says the plan, like scroll all the way to the bottom. Let me see if I can find the name of it. And that like shows, oh, here it is. It's this. Insulin antibodies is what it's called.
Oh yeah, anti-insulin antibodies. So you have that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would explain why you have sensitivity, right? And I run that whenever I see somebody who has, you know, their fasting insulin comes back on the low side, like 2 under 3, and I'm concerned. Like, so if I see somebody come back with a fasting insulin under 3, then I'll run a postprandial insulin. Have your highest carbohydrate meal that you typically eat, not the crap that somebody else would eat, but just what is your highest carbohydrate meal? We want to see if it goes up. And if it doesn't go up or up much, then I'm concerned and then I run an insulin antibody test. So he ran the insulin antibody test and you showed positive for that.
Yeah. And he was like, that surprises me, Laura. But, and what I'm finding is even stuff like what I would consider my cheat, which is like a siete almond flour tortilla, right. You know, like, oh, like those are spiking me. Like yeah. Anything, like occasionally I'll have like a, like cassava.
Yeah, cassava's, I tried cassava once and same thing.
It's spiking me.
It spikes because it's too much carbohydrate. So when you read it, it has like 7 grams, 12 grams, whatever it is, which for a normal person, it's not going to be a problem. But if you have issues, I've never had those antibodies tested. It's possible I have, you know, have all that, but I keep it under control. But yeah.
And I'm finding for me, my green juices are spiking me and I have to eat a lot of healthy fat to keep it like, you know, like I would eat fat before, like I would throw in some avocado, but now I'm like half an avocado or like making.
Oh, I eat a whole one at a time.
Okay. See, yeah. I don't think I was eating enough fat.
Yeah. And that's what I find is helping me to keep my blood sugar super steady, like, you know, between 65 and 85 or 90. Unless I eat something out of the way or eat too much. So it's just learning about your own body. You go, yeah, well, this healthy diet isn't so healthy for me. So it's great that you're able to see it. It probably comes down pretty quickly or maybe not, but it probably does given that your hemoglobin A1C. What was your hemoglobin A1C? Was it?
Like, oh, gosh. I think I have it here. I think it's the labs that we tested. Let me see if I can pull it. But yeah, it's just interesting to, this has been an interesting thing because I was like, I mean, my whole family was like, how could you have insulin issues? You eat cleanest out of all of us.
Right. But it, yeah. So it's not that you have it because of what you're doing. It's that you don't have type 1 diabetes right now because you, of what you're doing. Right?
Yeah.
It would be like an adult, like a lot of, right? People who don't get it when it, then it comes on later.
And we started inositol, we started berberine, and we started like a black seed oil and curcumin. And I've really upped my magnesium, but I'm having, he called it the dawning effect because my blood sugar is really high in the morning. And,
so was it high before? Cause you said it was normal on your blood test.
Yes. That's what's interesting. It was normal on my blood test, but it's high now that I'm checking it every day. It's really high. And like 102 when I wake up. And what's weird is now that I'm tracking it diligently and I'm eating a lot more healthy fat because that's helping. I've dropped like a little bit of weight. I feel like my body's even kind of toning up a bit. Like my trainer is like, whoa, like I can tell some good changes in my body from doing that and monitoring it. But that fasting is still high. So we did a cortisol test at Dutch and we're still waiting to get that back because I think that there's like a correlation there. But
tell me more though. Tell me because you can see it. Well, I can probably look at it. Like if it's high in the morning, like what, 90?
Yeah, like between 90 and like 103, 105. But this is what's weird. This is what I can't really figure out. It seems to alternate week by week. Like 1 week, my levels will be higher. And then another week, it'll be low. Like I'll wake up and it's like 65 or super low. And it's like, it'll be high 1 week. It'll be low 1 week. It'll be high. And my acupuncturist was kind of like, well, maybe it's taking your body a little while to kind of balance out since you're adding in more of these healthy fats and you're, cause what I'm finding for me to keep my levels okay is like fat, protein, vegetables. Like that's it. If I go outside of that, even some green smoothies are spiking me. When I was trying to do some green.
Do you put any fat in your smoothies? Cause I put avocado in my smoothies and that really helps a lot. No fruit, lots of veggies and some herbs, make them savory and they're yummy.
Maybe I did not put enough fat in my smoothies.
In your smoothie. And that, cause my smoothies keep me totally steady, but green juices, if I don't drink them super slow or I put chia seeds in the green juices, then it slows it down.
I need to do that because I was doing just like celery juice on an empty stomach in the mornings and
that spiked you?
It was shooting me up into like 125.
Yeah, I'm not seeing. Oh, I see a couple of the spikes here. Yeah.
Which is odd. And I also find because sometimes in the morning I'll get up, I'll dry brush, I'll take a shower. You know, I kind of do my thing before I go eat breakfast. And I'm noticing if I don't eat in 30 minutes, my levels will start going up and up and up and up until I go have breakfast. So now I'm like, okay, get up, go eat. Like intermittent fasting is not working for me right now.
And here you're going into the 60s. This was a steady day. Holy cow. I kept it right in the 70s and 60s.
I'm really working on my diet.
Yeah. So I don't see that. Where are the high morning ones? Because these are the more recent ones and you're not getting the high morning ones anymore.
Well, like today, this morning. Did this morning show up?
No, it just goes through. November 15th. Yeah.
Like this morning was a high morning.
What I would I don't know if you can do it on the app, but on your meter, I would recommend that you set your ranges 70 to 110.
Okay.
And then you'll see really clearly that you're going higher than you want to go because 140 is too high.
Okay.
Easier to see at a glance. Oh, I don't know if you can change it on here.
I don't think I even messed with my ranges, so I need to adjust that.
So you just go to the settings thing.
Okay.
The little wheel up at the top, you go to settings and then it says target range. And I have mine set to 70 to 110.
Okay, that'll be good.
Yeah, and I strive for the red. I look on a day that I have mostly red in the 60s, I'm happy because that's where I really want to be. But they don't let you go below 70. 70s.
And this is interesting too because when I feel sick, when I feel like I'm having a hypoglycemic, when I feel like I'm going hypo, and it's dropping. It's actually too high. I don't feel sick if it goes
over and over and over again. Over again. So I'm not surprised. And it's because it's high, but the insulin is low and it's not getting it into your cells.
Yeah. Like I'll get shaky and I'll feel like, oh my gosh, I need to eat something. And then I check my blood sugar. And I'm like, oh no, I do not need to eat
something. Rest, do something else, do some meditation. Yeah. I see that over and over, over and over and over again. So, yeah, this is interesting. I'm so glad you got one. I wish we could get one for everybody. Canada, you can just get them over the counter and they're cheaper and they have a 14-day sensor. Did you get the 14-day sensor or the 10?
I have a 10.
Yeah.
That's what I guess they had available.
Coming out with the 14 soon.
That'll be nice. I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, I've been testing it with my blood one, my finger prick one, and they're within like about 4 points of each other. They're pretty accurate.
Yeah, they're very accurate. The only time it won't be is if you're testing it when you're going up. If you're going up pretty fast, this one will lag.
Mm, okay.
So you'll see, oh, why is that 20 points higher? And then you check it later, and when it stabilizes, it's the same again. So that's normal. The other thing that can interfere with the reading and make it too high is ascorbic acid. So if you take high dose, I don't know what the high dose is. I just know that one day I took a huge amount. I felt a sniffle coming on. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to load up with vitamin C. And I just loaded up with vitamin C. And then I was taking my blood and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And I tested it with my finger. I'm like, this is like 40 point difference. What the heck? You know, good old Google researched it and found out that ascorbic acid interferes. So if you ever like do high dose, you know, if you feel a cold coming on or whatever, the numbers won't be accurate on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The only thing there, you had a spike there.
And yeah. I was kind of wondering with these higher levels in the morning, if I should try to eat like a handful of nuts or some almond butter or something and then go to sleep and see if that will. I've tried both. I've tried not eating anything before bed because, to be honest, it's blowing my mind because I always ate fat, but I'm having to eat a lot. And when I do that, I don't have any sugar cravings. I'm good to go for like four to five hours until the next meal. Like it's a lot better.
And just make sure you eat plenty of greens. Especially if you can't juice them without it going up, just eat tons of them.
Yeah. I've been like making almost veggie bowls in the morning, like cauliflower and broccoli. And it's because it's cold here. So I'll like heat it all up and then I throw like half an avocado on top. And it's interesting, but any of my like cheats, I've just had to take those all out completely.
Yeah. I hear you. So, I mean, this is great to be on this track. The fact in the more, sometimes there is I would recommend you get a ketone meter and see if you're going into ketosis, right? But, if you're on this higher fat diet with very low carb, you might be going into mild ketosis, and then that would help you to keep steady. But I'm wondering in the morning, I mean, we do see that a lot when people, they call it the dawn effect. When you go to a very low carb or a ketogenic, some people on a ketogenic diet or a paleo, for a time, the fasting sugar is higher. So I think, you know, unless it's spiking super high, I would just watch it for a while and also watch to see how fast it comes down. So test it when you first wake up, test it within a half hour, test it within another half hour. And it could be that before when you were testing or when you went into the lab, it wasn't right as you woke up, right? It was at least an hour later just to get dressed and go to the lab. So just check those things to see why that the lab discrepancy with yours. And now that you have this, the next time you get a lab test, you'll be looking at it. You don't even have to go sit in the car and prick and then sit in the car and prick right after. You'll have it right there and you'll know how it compares to the lab.
Because this is interesting. What I'm noticing since tracking it when I get up is if I don't eat, it'll just keep spiking and spiking and spiking.
Yeah. So what you're doing is your liver is going, your glucagon is going to your liver and saying, give me some glycogen, give me some glycogen, and it releases.
Because I was kind of trying to see if I could, you know, exercise a little bit or do some things first and then go get breakfast. And I'm finding now that I'm testing, it's like I got to get up and within 30 minutes, if I don't eat, it's going to keep, my blood sugar is going to keep spiking.
Yeah. Then that's the right thing for you. Intermittent. If you are going to do some intermittent fasting, you could play with eating breakfast, eating lunch, and then skipping dinner. And then the next day and seeing how that goes. But yeah, I wouldn't play with that. We all have to find our exact right thing for us. For me, it's best to just keep fasting. And by, you know, if I fast in the morning and I don't eat until 2, oh my God, my blood sugar is like, it goes into the 60s and it's beautiful, or 50s even sometimes. My ketones go up. I feel great. But then I eat and, you know, I can't live on fasting. I love when I fast, but there's too many things that I just ate after 6 days, like 5.5 days. So, but it feels so good, but you get weak, you get tired, you don't have any more fuel, and those ketones are just so much you can go with. But I would get a ketone meter just to have some accurate data with it.
I've never used that before.
Yeah. I would guess that these times when, you know, some of these days I wouldn't expect you to be in ketosis, but you had some days down here where you were, where did it go? Like in here with those lows, you probably got into mild ketosis there. Like there. Wow. That went super low. And have you had your fasting insulin done?
No, I don't think we've tested that lately.
Test your fasting insulin.
Okay.
And then test your postprandial. So if you can test it at right before, you know, right when you get up before you eat, and then test it like 45 minutes after you eat, which means going to the lab and eating your breakfast in the car and going back in. So it's a pain, but I would do that just to see.
Okay. And,
to see how much that is impacting you, how much that, that antibody is impacting you.
And then do you think as far as the PCOS piece, like with, as I'm tracking and as I'm just keeping it, you know, and I'm kind of figuring out my patterns and that I need to eat a lot of healthy fats, that will start to kind of, I got a basal thermometer because I was just curious. I don't even know, if it's interesting. I'm reading this book called Healing PCOS, and she was saying just because you have the sticky egg white discharge doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually ovulating.
Mm.
And the only way to actually check that is to be checking your temperatures.
There's also an ovulation kit. And so you watch and you can do it, you know, right in that mid cycle. If you're regular, then somewhere, you know, you start testing it maybe on day 9 or 10 and then take it and you'll see, whoops, there I ovulated, done. But with the temperatures, you're going to see steady, steady, steady. You're going to see a rise, it's going to stay there for a few days and then it drops off.
And I'm kind of interested in this because now that we can have intercourse, I wanted options for contraception that did not involve any oral contraception or birth control or IUDs or any of those things. So
I'll tell you what, make sure you test, you check your cycles for several months before you think you got it. Okay. I did that way back when I was, you know, in my 20s and I got pregnant. Oh yeah. First time trying natural family planning and now I'm pregnant. Okay.
And I think my husband's going to get a vasectomy. We're doing all the things, but I was kind of curious about ovulation and.
Yeah.
I can add to this. This is Eva again. I have worked with a client that was in her mid-20s, and I think I shared this story before. She was classic PCOS. I have a PCOS, so I know a lot about it, but I worked with this client, and she was told that she could never get pregnant because obviously she was making cysts on her ovaries instead of having the proper ovary response. So the doctor said, that's not going to happen for you. Well, after 6 months of working with her, she lost close to 40 pounds and got her period on a regular basis and was controlling her sugar and she wasn't protecting herself and she got pregnant. So the healthier you are and the better you control your diet, the more your body will respond in the proper way. So if you would just eat standard American diet, you probably will have the classic PCOS symptoms.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because you work on it so much, then your body will. I have PCOS and I have two children. Yes, I had to take infertility drugs with my second one, but I got pregnant with the first one and I had PCOS ever since I remember. Like mm-hmm. when I was my first period, I had 6 months in between periods. Mm. So I was classic, no, you know, injections of progesterone to bring it back. I mean, it was just, you know, nobody ever talked about it, but I got pregnant. So don't use that as a birth control.
Yeah, don't use it as birth control. Yeah. Right, but you can't afford to. I mean, I know you'd love to get pregnant and have a baby, but with your history.
It's pretty serious. And it's interesting. I've done a lot of work around it, and I've come to terms, but just the sarcoma I had is estrogen receptors, and then they reconstructed my abdomen, so there's some permanent stitches there. So we're kind of thinking condoms, fertility awareness method, vasectomy.
Yeah, I would say do the fertility awareness with, make sure you do that. And then the vasectomy, you know, even though those don't always work either. So, but I would say definitely do it together. Don't just rely on the family planning because of you, who you are and what's going on. It's very unsafe for you to get pregnant.
Laura, if you want some more information on natural family planning, I can assist you with that. I've used natural family planning all of my adult life for over 30 years.
Awesome.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Be awesome.
There are a lot of different things that you have to pull together, including the cervical mucus, the temperature, as well as the calendar, and looking at all of your other symptomologies. And like Dr. Rita Marie said, you have to be willing to abstain for a certain period of time to be able to track all of those things to understand how your system works, because everyone's system is different. But if you'd like more information on that, I'd be happy to provide you with that.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
That would be awesome. Thank you. Yeah. Cause it's funny. I mean, with pelvic pain for this many years, we weren't having intercourse. So it was like, this is awesome, but it's also like, and it makes my husband very nervous because, like Rita Marie said, we're like very much like, this is for medical reasons, for a lot of reasons. We have to be really careful. So,
so the condoms with the right timing, abstain from, you know, if you know, at least at this point, before you learn all this technology of it, if you know your cycles are always 28 days, then abstain from like day 8 through 15, you know, or yeah, condom. But be careful. Yeah, just be careful, because I don't want you to be at risk.
Yeah, thank you. And then is there anything else that you would suggest, Dr. Rita Marie? I feel like I'm...
No, I think you're on the right track. And I'm looking at the earlier numbers with the later numbers. It's improved a lot. And I totally agree with the extra fats. You know, there's so many low fat, low diet, and it doesn't work for everybody. And it doesn't work for me, but it's whole food, plant-based fats is what I'm looking at, right? So avocados and coconut and olives and soaked nuts and seeds and all the other stuff that is good fats that also has a lot of other nutrition with it, but tons and tons and tons of vegetables. And my diet, I don't even do animal products. So my diet is big plates of veggies with nuts and seeds and avocado and coconut, and I pack it on. And half an avocado, from a practical standpoint, I don't do half avocados, because unless you can give the other half to somebody else to eat, by the next day I go to eat it and it's brown, no matter what I do. So that's my rationale for always eating a whole avocado. Oh, you can't waste it. It's going to go brown. Anyway.
I like it.
You know, this was way back when you first started, right? So you were super low there. But you know what? I find sometimes when I go to a new one, like the other day I went to a new thing and I woke up and it said it was, I don't know, 52. And I'm like, how could it be 52? It was like 89 when I went to bed last night. And I checked my ketones, and my ketones were lowish, like 0.7 or something. I went, oh, that's wrong. So that's the other reason for ketones. You know that if your sugar is low, your ketones are going to go higher. And if your sugar is high and your ketones are high, then the thing's wrong. But I found that it was the first 2 hours of putting on a new meter, a new sensor, that it was wacky. It was just wacky. So I don't even.
I feel like that too. Yeah. That you get some kind of weird stuff initially.
Yeah. It's just kind of stabilizing. It's, yeah, there's that whole calibration. I heard that with the new one, the calibration is going to go down to an hour.
Mm.
So you don't have to wait 12 hours. And then it's also going to last for 14 days. So.
Oh, that's good.
Great. I know. I think you're on the right track. And, you know, the herbs you said you're taking make sense. The inositol. The one thing that spearmint tea is supposed to be really good for PCOS.
Oh, okay.
For whatever reason, there's a whole bunch of studies on that. So just throw that out in the mix. It's easy to do. Drink some spearmint tea.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. 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 Interesting. Yeah.
And it's just interesting to me too, that I do this for like a month, like really track and that the pelvic pain, I mean, like that was a huge thing. And we were like, whoa,
huge.
I mean, I've been working with my pelvic floor PT for like the last six, oh gosh, since months, several months.
Yeah. So, you know, take the stuff out that spiked it. See if you can change the setting. So it's 70 to 110. So it's real easy visually to see when you're off, and you want to always keep it within that 110.
Okay.
110 or lower than 70 is fine. Right. As long as you feel okay. Yeah. But just take out those tortillas. I'm sorry. I had to give them up too. And try the juice with the chia seeds in it. Just let it sit for 15 minutes and soak it up.
I'll do that. Cause I was shocked when the just celery juice on an empty stomach spiked me so high, but maybe it's because like I'm noticing if I don't give myself food within 30 minutes of waking up, it just keeps going up and up and up.
I just think, yeah, and I think if you get fat in there early on, right, make sure that that breakfast has a fair amount of fat, or if you're drinking a juice that it has fat, it could be avocado, you just have to put it in the blender.
Okay.
Then,
I guess I was kind of thinking do the juice on an empty stomach to kind of help, but I guess some juice is better than no juice.
It's better than no juice. And you could eat an avocado side by side with it. You can put chia, play with it and see what works best for you.
That's a good idea. I'll add that in.
Yeah.
Fiber. Add the fiber. That makes a big difference. So
And the veggies, right.
If you take fiber out, it will spike your sugar.
Yeah. That's a good point. Right. So that's sometimes what I'll do is I'll have the juice because I think it's more concentrated, gives me more, but I'll have it with my salad or with my veggies.
Mm.
Yeah. And the chia provides you with the fiber. So that's why putting the chia in there is really helpful.
And do you think it's worth doing like a small, like fat, healthy fat before bed? If you're having the dawn
effect, I'd do that last resort. And, if you do it, make it avocado. Because avocado is known to, improve your insulin sensitivity and bring down your sugar.
Okay, I can do that. Yeah, I'll try to hold off. I'm really interested to see what the cortisol levels are going to be and if those are corresponding with the sugar.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Thank you, Laura. And thanks for all your input for Shonda and her niece.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. This I just think is so interesting because I wasn't the typical thing, and I think Western medicine would have missed it. Like if he didn't. I think the Rolfer was actually palpating like the ovary, and that's what they told me. They were like, "You're little." So with somebody skilled like that, it was just funny all the things that happened
because I think that what would have happened, they run the test, the test runs a little high, no big deal, everything looks good. The fact that he even ran the insulin and antibodies is very good, so you got somebody who's on the ball there.
I have a really good doctor.
Yeah And the fact that he knows about the Libre and prescribed one for you, yay.
I know, I hadn't even found it out, and I guess here locally, I mean, I'm in a small town in West Texas, but the pharmacist was asking me, do you like it? You're only like one or two people that we have on it right now. So,
wow. Yeah. I've been talking about it. You haven't been on as many calls recently, but I've been talking about it a lot on these calls and on my ear calls, and a lot of my people in ERC have gotten them. Yeah.
I love it. I love it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Laura.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Margarita Marie, can I add one last thing for Laura?
Absolutely, please.
I have the cortisol that I have to watch also, Laura. So I have the same thing. It's high. My PCOS now in my 50s. That's what I have to deal with. So it's high sugar in the morning. But I notice if I take something to manage my cortisol at night, and I take my second dose of my sugar control, either chromium or inositol, either myo and dichiro. I combine both. And that levels the sugar in the morning. So you might want to look into that.
That's a good point. That's excellent. Yeah. So it's not like something like cortisol manager.
Yeah, I take cortisol manager. And sometimes if I have a stressful day, I have to take two. But when I was fasting with the ketogenic diet, it was surprising how high my sugar was. But in like within a month, it balanced out. But I added the cortisol manager.
Okay. And that would be, that's phosphatidylserine and some other things. Magnolia is another one.
Magnolia, yeah. For me, it was L-theanine and, yeah, all those. So.
Good. Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
You guys are awesome. All right. I'm going to go on to Michelle. Come on down. Is this yours, Michelle? This is Michelle's. Yeah. No, this is Shonda's. I can close that one. This is Laura's. Where is? This is Shonda. I don't know where yours went. I had him open. I must have accidentally closed him. Let me open him again. Oh, here. No, that's Shonda's. Here's, oh, here's what these.
It was a Dutch and a blood.
Yeah, it was a Dutch. Yeah, I know. I had it open a little while ago. Okay, here we go. Yeah, so this is, let me just open these again. Oh, here they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one and the chemistry.
Yep, that one.
Got it. All right. And your history is in here, which I like it because I can see it straight across. So this is a, where's the age?
57-year-old female.
57-year-old person, 130 pounds, 5'6", single. And her chief complaint is no libido, hypertension, thyroid problems, digestive issues, and yeast infections. She's on Armour. She's on hypertension medication.
Also, her thyroid has been removed.
Oh, it's been removed. Okay, I had surgeries here. Let's just change this. Okay, thyroid removed. Was it cancer or whatever?
They just removed it. I had hoped that she wouldn't, but you know, I've been working with her for years, and I keep on suspecting autoimmune. But when we run the thyroid antibodies, they don't come back elevated. But
did she have cysts though?
I can't remember exactly what it was, but they removed it, I think, because of some kind of, well, the enlargement, because it was becoming
visible. It was enlarged. Okay. That's a sign. You know, they don't, Western medicine doesn't appreciate that if you've got normal antibodies, but you've got cysts or thyroid enlargement, it's probably autoimmune.
Yeah.
You treat it as such, but they removed it instead.
So I was trying to convince her that it was autoimmune, but when the antibodies came back negative, she was like, I guess it's not autoimmune. And so she went ahead with the surgery.
Were they negative according to our functional standards, or was it negative according?
Well, negative according to their standards, it was very, just slightly into our range. So it wasn't, it didn't have that alarm factor for her.
Right, but the the explanation, and you just have to, it takes more convincing, right? But let me look at the numbers.
So now we're dealing with that issue in terms of the fact that her doctor who's managing her thyroid hormones is not really doing comprehensive panels for us to really figure out what's going on, because the problem hasn't been solved, you know. Yeah. But that's the major issue that I wanted to bring up in her panel here is her lipid panel.
Yeah, let me come back to that because you do want to see her thyroids.
Oh yeah, it's incomplete. It's only two markers.
I mean, TSH markers. Is high. Total T3 is within range. Free T4 is low. They don't have free T3, so
yeah, so
guaranteed free T3 is going to be low if free T4 is low. Right, yeah. She probably doesn't have an overconversion. Vitamin D is super low, B12. Exactly. And where are the thyroid antibodies?
Hmm?
I thought you said she did the thyroid antibodies.
Oh, not this panel, in previous panels.
Oh. Do you have them in here? Can I look at the history one?
You can look and see. The history should pop up.
Oh, you're using the thing with the...
So I think it's usually like the last...
Yeah, it's usually the last section. But this is a practitioner. Oh, this is a patient report. Okay. All right, here we go. Yeah, you do. Let's see. We'll look at this one instead of the other one so we can compare. TSH, free T3, she got done a long time ago.
Yeah, because she had... Yeah, wow. These... Yeah.
She does have an overconversion issue. Da, da, da. Well, a year ago, she had an overconversion issue, and she probably still has it because this year she's got 0.87. So see that? It's 0.9 and 3.5. That's an overconversion issue. We don't see that very often.
Where is that, sorry?
Right here. Free T4 is 0.9. Free T3 is 3.5.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
From so she's got an overconversion.
Or to the T3.
Yeah. So that's rare. Oftentimes it's related to elevated testosterone. Has she had testosterone tested? Well, look at the Dutch.
Well, that's the thing. When we did the Dutch, everything is low. If you flip over to her Dutch.
Interesting. This is
And when we go to her cholesterol, it's extremely elevated. Her HDL is extremely elevated. Her triglycerides are very low, and all of her sex hormones as well as stress hormones are extremely low. And so I was looking at the chart where we have the precursor to all of the hormones is cholesterol. And I was wondering, is there such a thing where someone does not convert their cholesterol into their hormones properly?
Yeah, we were just talking about that on a call today with...
I just came in, so I missed all of that.
No, not on this call, on ERC call earlier.
Oh, okay.
That she had very low sex hormones, but very high cholesterol. And they said, well, it's not converting. And it's an acetyl-CoA, I think, that converts B5.
That's what I was saying, right? That we were going to... Start to supplement with the B5.
Start to supplement. And the doses I've seen for adrenal is 500 milligrams three times a day. Hard to get compliance on that because nobody wants to take things three times a day. But I would definitely look at that. These are, wow, look at the HDLs.
I know, it's extremely elevated. That's why I kept on looking at the autoimmune aspect with that and the vitamin D so low.
Is she taking any vitamin D?
Yes, she is taking vitamin D. It's low. She's only taking 2,500, but still, you know, extremely low.
Yeah, and she may have some SNPs. So
yeah, she may.
Mm-hmm. So VGL, you know, so the dangerous ones are normal, but look at the cholesterol. So the cholesterol is high, not because of her. You know, I'd like to see LDL under 100, but her
triglycerides are really low.
The triglycerides are super low. Yeah, I hardly ever see that. I would start thinking a fat malabsorption issue.
I asked her about that. And, you know, like the classic toilet bowl and, you know, indigestion.
Yeah, is it greasy? Is it floaty? Yeah.
Well, she has SIBO type symptomology. So we're working with her on the digestion issue. But she didn't really complain of the fat things, but again,
colored stool. Did you ask her what color her stool is?
Yeah, she said it was ordinary. She didn't, because I asked her if it was clay colored or if she had, you know, greasiness in the stools, and she said no, her stools are mushy but not greasy.
Brown.
Yeah, brown.
Yeah. Okay. Well, low triglycerides.
I mean, really low.
Really? I mean, I don't mind them being
that high,
but given, and her blood sugar was, I mean, she's got the opposite of what most people have. She's got like a 0.5 to 1 ratio of triglycerides to HDL, right? When we usually look at them, we're looking for a 1 and we hardly ever see it. Mm. You've got like a 0.5 to 1.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And her A1C is not bad, you know, relatively speaking. The other big complaint for her, besides the low libido, is the hypertension. She doesn't want to go on hypertension meds. So I started her with the niacin, because the niacin will also help with the cholesterol issue.
It's a little this doesn't match up. Well, before you go on to that, mm-hmm. you know, we're looking for certain patterns we expect, right? So if the triglyceride HDL ratio is high, we expect that there's going to be glucose imbalances, even if the fasting doesn't mean anything, is normal. But if the hemoglobin A1C, is on the high side, right? He says green. I really want it to be 5. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at what 5.5 means in terms of average glucose, we're talking in the 115 range. That's too high for average glucose. We should be peaking no higher than that. So, there's a discrepancy here. So we need to look at what is going on with her chemistry here that's causing this, it's out of whack, right? If we see iron and ferritin in there, either both high or both low, it's normal. But if we see one high and one low, we're looking for what's the pathway that's screwed up here. Uh-huh. I mean, she's low on her creatinine. Her bun is normal. Muscle wasting. How is she physique-wise?
She is slender because she's only 130 pounds. She's 5'6".
And
she lost considerable weight in, I'd say the past year, you know, but she's maintained her weight now for several months.
Okay. Does she look like saggy where, you know, does she look like she's toned?
No, she's not toned. And I've been encouraging her to do more weight bearing resistance exercises to work on the musculature. She has started eating meat products once again. So, you know, the protein is fine.
Well, it's not though. In the blood, it's, oh, she came up. Yeah.
Yeah, she came up.
Backwards. Uh-huh. She came up. Right. But it's again looking at, yeah, she ate more protein, but was there a malabsorption problem? So when she was low, we want to look at, was she low because she wasn't getting enough? And that would be looking at her diet or not, that she wasn't absorbing all that. Right. But giving her meat helped, right? Giving her protein powder, anything that you give her would help.
Yeah, she does protein powders, because I've been getting her to do more smoothies. And because one of the things that we were working on was the malabsorption issue, her globulin went down, which, you know, showing that there's less inflammation than there was before. Yeah. But this cholesterol thing has got me perplexed.
Yeah, that's perplexing. So, I mean, you could certainly try the B5.
But yeah, that's the only thing I can think. That and the niacin, you know.
Now, you know, we see the hyperthyroidism gives these high numbers. How long ago did she have it removed?
Oh, several years ago, about 6 years ago.
And she's been on thyroid replacement since.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's still high in spite of the fact that she's taking, but also her TSH was 4 something, which says her medication levels aren't right.
Yeah, but the doctor, you know, I keep on asking her to get the doctor to run a more complete thyroid panel so that we can, you know, drill down on everything and again, make sure that the antibodies are not elevating, but you know how that goes.
Yeah, so he didn't test it on this one. It hasn't been tested in a long time.
They haven't tested it in some time.
Yeah. Yeah. Is she live in Florida?
No, she's in Texas.
Okay. So she could get direct labs or my.
Right, yeah, she can. It's just about her paying for it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost much to get just the thyroid panel, but. You know.
No. No. It's definitely worth it because you want to know how to approach it. The other option is you just approach it like it's autoimmune. CRP? What's her CRP?
She doesn't have it on here in this.
She had it before and it was normal.
She had it before and it was
fine. A little higher than I really like. I like it under 1, but it's still not in the danger range. The vitamin D needs to get fixed.
Yeah. And so what I was looking at, like I said, is her Dutch. And in her Dutch, all of her hormones are low.
And she's menopausal?
Yes, she's menopausal. But even for menopausal, it's still like bottom.
And testosterone's barely.
Mm-hmm. So it's not that she's converting to testosterone.
No, she's not aromatasing.
And her cortisol is extremely low.
Yeah. Follows the pattern, but it's low. So we're looking like a type. Where's her DHEAsyl? Yeah, we're looking at a type stage three.
Yeah. So I have her starting with pregnenolone, and a little bit of DHEA.
I think that's a good move, especially given that. But you, what you don't want to do, you want to figure out, start with the B5.
Yeah, we're doing the B5 because I want to get that cholesterol down into that pathway.
Yes.
And that's why with the DHEA, I only have one drop of that.
Yeah.
And one drop of the cortisol, just because she's just
pregnant. Yeah. Very low dose, because you don't want the negative feedback to go, exactly. Oh, we don't need it. We have plenty of pregnenolone. Don't convert. Right. How's her energy?
Low energy. And like I said, absolutely no sex drive.
Well, of course not.
Dry vaginal.
Dry vaginal. Well, you know what you could do too is you can get her you can get over the counter estriol cream.
Well, she's tried the Juva or whatever from Dr. Kubeka.
Yeah.
She said it didn't really do anything for her.
I'll tell you one thing. That works really well for the dryness and the, it's hard to get, but the dryness and the sex drive is vaginal DHEA.
Vaginal DHEA? Oh, I didn't even know they had
that. Becca used to make these little tablets of vaginal DHEA and you put it in and it dissolved. She got shut down as you can't do that. It's a pharmaceutical. You could prescribe it, but you can't sell it over the counter. But what you could do is you could get capsules of DHEA. I mean, you could put the capsules up, or you could get some of those suppository kind of molds, get some cocoa butter and melt the cocoa butter, and then just put the DHEA in there, you know, harden them, and then insert them vaginally.
Mm-hmm.
Because that works amazingly. I actually was experimenting with it when she had it, and I had to stop taking it. It was like I couldn't function. All I could do is look for my man. It was crazy. It was really crazy. And maybe I could have cut it down to twice a week or something, but
So it helps with the libido?
Oh my God. And I've never had a problem with libido. But I've never had a libido like that before.
Okay.
It was distracting. It was totally distracting. So I had to stop. So just, you know, FYI, probably TMI, but yeah, that can work really well. And estriol, you know, straight estriol. I think she has other stuff in there. I don't know how much estriol she has in there. But she has all kinds of good lubricants and all that. How long did she take it for?
She took it for the entire container.
Okay. And again, right, because everybody's independent, it's dose dependent. So she may have needed to take more, especially given the rock bottom levels of her hormones. Mm-hmm. But I think bringing it down estriol, because her ratios, she's got a 2.3 and a 0.4, so her estriol needs to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Her ratios here, the 16 is very low, so she's higher risk for the bone, you know, osteoporosis kind of problems. Mm-hmm. Does she do much in the way of cruciferous?
Yes. But she has to limit it, and she has to cook it because of the digestive issues.
Okay.
I guess we can do like broccoli sprouts instead and powder or something.
Yeah, and powder. I would want to look at also her iodine status. Because the conversion from, well, the estriol is low. So the conversion from this conversion here, is iodine-dependent.
Okay.
And again, looking at her thyroid, right? Well, she doesn't have
We definitely have to tackle the thyroid issue.
You know, I'm saying about the iodine, it might have been a problem with the
With the conversion there. Okay.
Methylation, she's fine on methylation.
Yeah, she's good. She's pretty good in terms of ratios for a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's just, like I said, everything is like bottomed out.
Yeah, I'm looking to the over-the-counter estriol.
Okay.
I've had people get good results with that. I mean, of course you can get a prescription, but it doesn't sound like her doctor knows much about this stuff.
No, I think Apex has an estriol.
Oh, they do? Okay.
I think so. Mm-hmm. It's called Estrovite or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it
is. And then there's also, I don't know whether it's, I think the ones from this company, I had one here. They sent me samples. They have an EstroAdapt or EstAdapt, the Biomatrix. Mm-hmm. And see if I can find it here, because I think it's just estriol. And that's more oral, but you can always, this is a topical. It's an oil base, so you can just have her take a couple of drops, mm-hmm. put it on the vulva, or, you know, do it vaginally mm-hmm. if she's comfortable doing that.
Well, what I wanted to do was hold off on that because she's not really in a relationship right now, so she's okay with the sex drive issue.
atrophy is what I worry about.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay. The longer you got to go, even if you don't want to use it,
get that conversion happening, you know.
Yeah, get the conversion happening, but temporarily. So if she's not in a relationship, it's not an urgent need to get her.
And so I wanted to see if we could jumpstart that pathway before supplementing with the downstream hormones.
No, I agree. But giving her a little bit of that DHEA, I don't see a problem with that. But I wouldn't go high with the pregnenolone because it could cause a negative feedback
mm-hmm.
with that conversion. I'm just going to look at... What converts cholesterol to pregnenolone? Within the mitochondria, yep. By an enzyme called CYP11A1. See if it'll give me a little bit more. And that's where it's the B5 is a cofactor.
Yeah.
See if there's any others.
And you said 500 of the B5?
You know, everything that talks about adrenal support is, 500, 3 times a day.
Okay.
It's a good chart. We didn't talk much about it. Let's see. I don't know how much I trust Wikipedia, but it's a starting point anyway. Anybody can go in and edit these things. And there's sometimes a lot. Okay, there's this. My touch screen isn't working anymore. I keep wanting to move it. How to convert and live strong.
Pregnenolone,
an overview.
What's that one there on how to convert cholesterol?
It's Live Strong, so they're like kind of like Wikipedia. We'll try, but it's usually just they advertise. That's all they want to do here. Step one, eating foods that contain it.
And that's the B5.
Yeah. Floating in a small bunch of removal of a few chites. Yes. It's usually like junk science. It's usually not in depth. I saw one a little bit further down that talked about
conversion of cholesterol to pregnenolone.
Mobilize a cytochrome P450.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, an NLM.
Is that a SNP, that CY, whatever they had there?
There was a CYP. Yeah, it could be a SNP for sure because it's a gene. I don't know if it's measured in any of the tests. I didn't see, it wasn't one of the ones I'm familiar with. These are usually, I saw something with high cholesterol. Here we go. Let's see if it talks about that. Okay, so first step in making cholesterol into your steroid hormones, you place inside your cells in the mitochondria, yes. And it's this acetyl-CoA that is involved with that. It also needs T3.
Oh, and she has low T3.
No, she has low T3, but she has high, assuming from the last one, free T3.
No, no, her T3 was normal. The T4 was low, I think. Yeah,
T4 was low, yeah. Conversion of sun light. Interesting. Sunlight. Does she get outdoors much?
So-so. Mm-hmm. And that would be the vitamin D also.
Yeah, so I would be suggesting getting outdoors to help with that conversion and also help with the D.
What is that with the bacterial infection up here? So high cholesterol could really be an indicator of the body trying to fight off a bacterial infection, because we've been dealing with that. Her immune panel showing some kind of infection, and she's had it for years. And then her doctor told her, oh, it may just be your normal. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah, you're normal, having bacteria invading your body.
I wanted to stop.
See, they don't do this kind of work, like what we're doing right now. They don't do this kind of digging. You go, wow, that doesn't make sense. Let's dig in and look to see what the chemistry is, and let's look to see if there's any studies that support. That's the problem.
So is that going back to the whole autoimmune issue? Why is high cholesterol an indicator of bacterial infection? What's the
It's an antioxidant, and it's anti-inflammatory. And a lot of the theory is that the reason that the buildup happens of the cholesterol in the bloodstream is that, or in the walls, the endothelial linings.
Oh, yes, right.
Damage, right? And it's going to patch it up.
Yeah.
And if we lower it artificially, we're decreasing the body's, it's an attempt to heal.
So then we just need to go back to dealing with the immune issue and the oxidative stress and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Do you have her on any antioxidants?
I have her with, we had the D, E, A, vitamin C.
What about the heavy hitters though? What about CoQ10, glutathione?
Well, I was going to start her with the glutathione. I was just waiting to see if we could get confirmation on the whole antibody stuff. But she has all of those other indicators showing oxidative stress. And plus, she's just a high-strung person.
Yeah. That's a big piece of it. So teaching her your lovely approach to heart math.
Trust me, she's gone through the heart math course, but it's for her to actually do it. You know, and I keep on reminding her, the only way it's going to help is if you actually do it.
Well, that's the thing, right? They have to do it. So creatinine is all normal. Cortisol is low, low, low. I'm on the wrong one. I'm looking for the oxidative stress marker one. Ah, here it is. So B12 is fine. These are all fine. Everything's within range except for the serotonin marker.
So it was more in her blood work.
Yeah. So she, you know, this is fine. It's the oxidative stress marker. Yeah. So looking at this, you want to support these adrenals, right? Mm-hmm. So of course, with what you've already taught her, she's got to do it.
I guess with the adrenal calm, but.
No, not adrenal calm.
She's always so high strung.
Right, but she's.
So I don't know if she's just burning through whatever little cortisol she's producing.
Yeah, she's got very little and she's needing it. So I wouldn't do adrenochrome because it will bring the
cortisol. Or the adaptogen then.
But I would do adaptogens and the calming adaptogens. I would do maybe rhodiola, tulsi. You could try ashwagandha. That might help with the thyroid too. Mm-hmm. Lemon balm, lavender, sleep with lavender on her pillow.
She does the essential oils. She likes doing the essential.
Good. Get her. Does she have a diffuser?
Yeah.
Yeah. So have her run that. DoTerra and Young Living both have a really nice relax formula.
Yeah, she's been using one, or Acacia, it's called Be Calm or something like that. I don't remember.
Calm. It's probably got the same stuff in it. Yeah. Same idea. So I would do that and everything you can do to calm her so she doesn't deplete what little she has. Because, yeah, she's very low. She's not flatlined or anything, but she's just very low.
Mm-hmm. At all points in the day.
Yeah, at all points, kind of follows the curve. And when you look at the cortisone.
Yeah, it says that she's using it up.
Yeah. Yeah, she still has a little bit of, you know, kind of the reserve. Mm-hmm. But when this drops a little more, this is going to drop. And when this drops, you know, them both drop, then she's in flatline, which is really hard to recover. I mean, you should be on the couch. So use those kind of things as a incentive. Look, you know, we got to get this fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got to calm.
Well, she has an autistic son.
Oh, and that's hard.
He's a young adult now, and it's just been very difficult trying to get him placed in a facility because he's becoming so unstable that she's afraid for her safety.
And I'm assuming she's gluten-free, dairy-free, and...
Mm-hmm.
Free.
Well, that's what I keep telling her also. So I, when she says certain things, I'm like, well, you already know what that's about. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. We've already talked about that one. What about glucose testing?
Which testing?
Glucose. Cause she had a 5.5 on her hemoglobin A1C.
Well, that's where I'll go with her next. She had been doing a program called GOLO where she had been very good on lowering all of her carbs and things of that nature. But recently she's gotten more lax with that and started eating all the junk again.
Yeah.
So I think that's why because her A1C was lower than that before. Okay. And I think with her getting lax in certain areas, now it's bumping up. And she has a history, I mean, a familial history with diabetes. So definitely have to get that in.
Yeah, the 5.5 is too high. So, I would get her doing the glucose, keep going on the gut, and then the glucose. The glucose testing actually gives people, like, the incentive to actually change when they see what's happening. Like Laura said, oh, my God, I didn't know. I have a spike up to 140 on my little treat foods. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if she's doing worse treat foods than Laura, which I anticipate that's what she's doing, that she may have those spikes and have more incentive to give them up.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, you got a lot of work to do here.
Now, how are we able to go through a portal of yours to get the meter?
I wish, because it needs a prescription. And the only way to get it is you put the doctor's name on the bottom if you order it online, or you have to get a prescription that they fax into the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And I just can't risk just randomly giving. Like I've done it and prescribed it for people who I know their history and I've worked with them, right? Like my golds and gold pluses.
Yeah.
Only a handful. Because it's extra work on us, but I'm also afraid of risking my license that, what do you mean? Yeah. You never even saw this person. How could you prescribe this?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of laying low with it.
And I hope hear you.
They get better.
Yeah. Understandable.
But you know, any doctor can do it, a functional medicine doctor, a chiropractor, a naturopath. I don't know about acupuncturists. I haven't known any to try. Optometrists, because Louisa's been prescribing them.
Okay.
So they're very, you know, they're not very, as long as you have an MPI number. So if you have an MPI number, so physical therapist.
And Louisa is located where?
He's in San Antonio.
Okay. Is that nearer to Houston?
No, but she asked her if she'd be willing to do it because it's in the state. It's a lot different, right?
Okay.
You know, she may say she requires to talk to this person on the phone and do
it. Yeah, or one little visit or something. Or
whatever. But she might be willing to do it.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. I'm just,
No, I'll
not so bad because it's Houston, so I may consider it, but I feel a little uncomfortable because I've already done a whole lot of procedures.
Yeah. I'll check with Louisa because she needs to go get her eye checked anyway. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. Send her to Louisa to get her eyes checked. And by the way, get her prescription. That'd be perfect. Right. Mm-hmm. It's about 3 hours a drive from.
Okay.
Yeah. There's not too bad. There's a lot of holistic doctors in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she'd have to have an appointment with them,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. You know, most of them are probably okay with it and say, look, I want to study this. I have a family history and I heard about these patches and I want one. Please describe mm-hmm. it for me.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Well, I will look into that B5 conversion and mm-hmm. all the other things. The bachelor BHEA. That's a new one. I didn't know about that one.
Oh yeah. It works well.
I mean,
which is good for you to know.
That's like, you could have done that. Just like you said, take a capsule and call it a day.
You could try capsule in the vagina. I mean, I don't know how well they melt. So make sure.
I mean to like burst it open and squish it in there.
To burst it open, put it in. You can do that. You can put it in a little water, tiny bit of oil, like coconut oil. Drop a coconut oil with the DHA powder in it and just
put
it up there. That could work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
It could work well.
All righty. Thank you.
Let's see. I'll stop share. Anybody else still here? Anybody have any? Oh, we had some good cases. We still have a lot of people still here. Anybody else have questions about any of the stuff we covered? It was some good, interesting cases here. Anybody? Hand up. Open your mic. Lynn disappeared. Oh no, she's there. I didn't see you here. Oh, there you are. Nope, I don't see anybody else. So I'm going to open your lines. You can all say goodbye and we'll call it a night. Good night, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, I like to see this. I'm going to kind of save this.